Om Shanti. So I introduce you to Sister Shilu, or Shilu Ben, or now Shilu Didi, our wise senior sister. Sister Shilu has lived in Pandav Bhavan, the headquarters and the original place of the Brahma Kumaris in India, for more than 50 years. She is one of our most sought-after teachers. She's traveled the whole world. She even came to Halifax, the little city where I live in Canada. She's the original translator. So everybody who's translating for you right now follows in her footsteps, because she was the first translator. And it's no small thing to translate, because it's like it comes into your head, into your ears and out your mouth without you thinking about it. So it means she has a very clean intellect, which is very helpful, because today she is going to explain the law of karma, which can be a bit complicated. No? So, and what two other things about her. We gather together like this in groups of 350, 500 at most. But Shilu Ben is responsible for all the Raj Yoga meditation camps for India. So up to 20,000 people at a time are here, and she's the one who conducts them. So she's a very capable leader. In her early days, I understand, she wished, instead of living here at the headquarters, to be out in a center. And she was given a very special blessing that the Ganges River has to flow for people to step into it and be purified, but that she, in fact, was like a pure pond, and she could be in one place and people could come to her and dip and purify. Interesting, no? So she's been in Madhuban all these years, very refreshing for those of us who come from foreign lands. So a warm welcome, Shilu Ben. Oh, and one last thing before she begins. We have 15, 20 minutes for questions at the end. But the way the questions will work, they must be very clearly written on a piece of paper and given to me. And then I will read them. Okay, so we don't waste time talking. You just write it very clearly if you have. And we'll save 15, 20 minutes at the end for question answer. Okay? Thank you. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. Yes, I would like you to repeat after me. Om Shanti. Om Shanti. Thank you. A very good morning to all of you. Today I have been told to speak on the subject of the spiritual laws of karma. Before we understand the spiritual laws, we have to understand what spirituality means. The word spirituality comes from the word spirit, the soul. So spirituality means dealing with the soul. Or we can say, in other words, dealing with the self. And who am I? You have already been told. I am a soul. I am eternal. I am immortal. I am imperishable. I am indivisible. And I am invisible. If I say these five words, they are very appropriate for the soul. Eternal, that is never created. It has always been there, immortal, living, imperishable. It cannot perish, it cannot be destroyed. And fourthly, indivisible. It cannot even be divided. And fifthly, invisible, because it cannot be seen with these naked eyes. These physical eyes are corporeal, something to do with matter. So these eyes can see things of matter, but obviously physical, but the soul is metaphysical, is above physical, but it can be visualized through divine visions or the divine insight or divine, we can say, visualization. So when I know I'm a soul, I have to speak that language. Many people do believe in the soul, but they say, I have a soul in me. Now, is that sentence right? I have a soul in me. Is that sentence right? No. Second sentence is, I have a soul in my body. Is that sentence right? I have a soul in my body. No, that sentence is also not right. Because when you say, I have a soul in me, that means I'm the body and I have a soul in me, and soul is different from me because I'm the body. But no, I am the soul. And if I say, I have a soul in my body, that means body is different, soul is different. Am I something third person? When I say, I have a soul in my body, then who am I? Again, the very big question, who am I? And therefore, there's another statement, I am a soul in my body. Now, what about this sentence? That's right. I am a soul in my body. Many great philosophers ask the same question, who am I? Who am I? Then why am I? From where am I? So many questions. What is the purpose of my life? Why did God create this world? Why was the need to come in this world? Why? We keep questioning. But spirituality answers all these questions. Who am I? I am a spiritual being. I am a spiritual being, a spirit. Some call it psyche. Some may say soul. This physical body has limitations. There is birth and death. That which is born has to die one day. No one can be eternal in this body, but I am eternal. I'm never created and I'm never destroyed. So as I have an eternal identity, that identity cannot be changed. But roles are many. The roles can be many. You know, an actor plays so many roles in a play, in a drama or in a film. He may play different roles, but his identity does not change, isn't it? So too, my identity is the same when I was a baby, small child, when I grew up, became youth, I became elder, I became aged, and I become old now, become senior. But then I am the same. Either it is in front of human beings or it is in front of God. I am the same. So what is it that is the same? In front of human beings, we show so much of ego. I am Mr. So-and-so, I'm this, I'm that. In front of God, we become so humble. We confess. We pray to God for forgiving us for our bad deeds or wrong deeds. So we plead to God, but in front of human beings, we show we are everything. In front of God, we say, I'm a sinner. But in front of people, if somebody tells me you are a sinner, I will get angry. How dare you call me a sinner? What sin have I committed? So we feel it's a different identity in front of people, human beings, and then in front of God. But actually, the identity is the same. And what is that identity? My qualities. I am a peaceful soul. I'm a loving soul. I'm a happy soul. I'm a powerful soul. You have been told about that. So when I know I am that in front of human beings as well as in front of God, and then when I say, to whom do I belong? Whose am I? To whom do I belong? Do I belong to human beings? My father, my mother, my sister, my brother, my child, my husband, my wife? No. When I die, no one belongs to anyone. So what we say, we are all actors playing our roles on this world drama stage. So when the drama is over, I have to go out of the stage. I cannot remain on the stage forever. That's how we say it. So when I understand this, I understand my true identity. So why did I come in this world? I came to play my role. Why does the actor come on a stage? He comes to play his role. So what type of role should I play? A role of a husband, a good husband. Role of a wife, a good wife, loyal wife. Role of a father, the one who's caring. Role of a mother, who's loving. So that's my role. So I have different roles to play. From morning till night, I play different roles with different people. But my identity should be the same. I should be loving to all. I should be caring for all. I should be helpful to all. So that is my eternal nature. Now when I understand this, I can understand karma also very well. But before I understand karma, then to whom do I belong? Whose am I? To whom do I belong to? I belong to one supreme being. And that's why we say this world is a family. Whole world is a family. Because I have a supreme father, a supreme being, the supreme source. And we are the children of that supreme being. So as the children of the supreme being, our eternal relationship with each one is, we're all brothers. That's why we say this world is a family, global family. Family means all brothers and one supreme being and supreme father. So when this is understood, the soul is understood, the supreme soul is understood, then the third step is understanding karma. So why am I here? To play my role in the best way possible. This is why I'm here. And secondly, why am I here? to share with all my spiritual qualities. Love, peace, happiness, I've come here to share with all. And thirdly, why have I come here? I have come here to glorify the Supreme Being, the one who has sent us on this earth. If somebody sends someone abroad for in his business, so he has to make sure that he glorifies the name of his company from where he has come or who has sent him. He cannot go against the task he is given. He is there for that task only. So why am I here? To glorify that Supreme Being, to obey his orders. We speak about the Ten Commandments. So God has given me some commandments. They are the spiritual laws which we all have to abide by. The one who lives in America will drive on the right side. But if that person comes to India and he says, no, I will drive only from the on the right side, immediately the police will catch him. No, you have to drive from the left side. So each country has its own laws. But there are some laws which are for everyone. Wherever you are, whoever you are, in whatever position you are, whatever top post you may have, even a peon, even a servant or the king, all have to abide by those spiritual laws which are for every soul. And what is the greatest law of karma? The greatest law of karma is, as you sow, so shall you reap, whoever you may be. As you sow, so shall you reap. In every religion, this spiritual law acts. No one can say, no, what I don't reap. No, you will reap. What type of seed you sow, accordingly you will get the fruit. If you sow a mango seed, you can't expect an orange tree or expect oranges from that tree. You will get only mangoes. But if you sow an orange tree, orange seed, definitely you will get oranges and not mangoes. So whatever you sow, that you reap. This is the first spiritual law of karma. The second spiritual law of karma is that what you sow, you don't reap immediately. You know, any seed you sow, you don't reap, get the fruit immediately. It takes some time, depends on what type of seed you sow. Vegetables grow very quickly. Fruits take time. A coconut tree, when put in the soil, the fruit comes after so many years. Some fruits come perennially, whole year round. Some fruits come only in season time. But the main law in all that is what you sow, you don't reap immediately, but it takes some time. But then some seeds may also reap immediately. I'll tell you which ones. And the third spiritual law is that you may sow one seed, but the fruits can be many. It's not just one fruit. In some, of course, you can say one fruit, but then, so it's different for every seed. But then there is a long way between the seed and the fruit. What is that distance? Why it takes so long? First of all, the soil has to be fertile. If the soil is not fertile, you have to put manure in it, some fertilizer in it. You know, you have to put that. You cannot, if you sow a seed in barren land, which is stony, it's not not plowed. You just sow a seed, you will get no fruit. So it has to be fertile, it has to be plowed beforehand. And then you sow the seed. And then you have to water that seed. If you just leave it like that without watering, even then you won't get the fruit. And thirdly, you have to sow it the right season. If the season is not right, you know, then also you will not get the fruit. Fourthly, when the fruit comes, you have to wait for the fruit to ripen. Because first the fruit is raw. And when it is raw, and if you just pluck it, you try to bite it, it is bitter, it is hard, you know, you may break your teeth. And so you have to wait till that fruit ripens. And after it ripens, you may pluck it. But so many fruits come. So it's not only you who will eat, but you will have them, and then you will also share. Because if you keep only for yourself, they can even rotten because they can't stay long. So you have to share with others so that they are used in the right way, so that they are used in a useful way. Everyone should get that happiness of the fruits. And then you have a seed in that fruit. You sow it again. So it is a process. It's a cycle. So the law of karma is also like that. What you give, you get back. All that goes around, comes around. And therefore the saying goes that what you expect from others, you have to give that yourself first. If you want happiness from others, then you have to give happiness. If I give sorrow and I expect the other one to give me happiness, how can I expect? Because I've given him sorrow and he has been hurt. So how can I expect him to give me happiness? He's hurt because I gave him sorrow. I spoke some ill words and he felt very bad. He felt hurt. And how can I expect him to give me happiness? So if I want to get happiness from others, I have to give happiness first. If I want respect from others, I have to give respect to others first. Some people have very high expectations. I should get respect, I should get this, I should get that, I should get that. Expectations are very high. But then I forget to ask myself, I give. Okay, even if I cannot give any monetary aid, maybe money I cannot give. I'm not that rich to give money, but at least I can speak few sweet words that doesn't cost me anything. Someone went to a shop where they were selling sweets. He was a beggar, you know, he was hungry. And he said, "Can I get some sweets? I'm very hungry." But that shopkeeper got very angry with him, very upset with him. He said, "Get out from here," you know, all the bad things he spoke to him. But that beggar taught him a lesson. He said, "Okay, don't give me sweets, never mind. But at least speak sweetly. At least speak sweetly." Does it cost to speak sweetly? No, it doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to be rich to give, to speak sweetly. You don't have to be a big person to give, to speak sweetly. Anyone can speak sweetly. So if I want others to speak with respect to me, how much do I give respect? So before I point out to anyone, I have to see one finger towards that person but three fingers towards me. So who has to do it first? Me. You know, in today's world, this blame game is so common. Why are you stressed so much? Oh, because of this one, because of that one, because of that one, I'm stressed. So we play a blame game. We blame everyone else. It's because of him I'm stressed. It's because of her I'm so unhappy. It's because of this one I feel uncomfortable. But this is a blame game. Why? Because three fingers are pointing towards me. Because of him. And then this thumb is upwards, saying that God is a witness. He's watching you. So we have a very lovely song. God is watching you. Because what you sow, that you will reap. You will get back what you give. So when I understand this, I need a lot of patience. If I have done something good to someone, karma philosophy says you don't have to boast about it to everyone. I helped him, I gave him money, I did this, I did that. If you do something good, then let it be so incognito that no one even comes to know. No one should come to know. There's a very beautiful saying in this. You do good to someone, then even the thought of that I did something good to someone, you throw it into the sea. Neki kar darya mein dal, that's a saying in Hindi. Do something good and throw it away in the sea. Don't even think about it again. Because the more you think about it, I did this, again that ego will come. I did it. The ego will come. So I say no, I'm only an instrument of the Supreme. And if you do something wrong, say it. Don't hide it. Usually we do the other way around. If we do something wrong, which we shouldn't do, we try to hide. Oh, please don't tell anyone. And then if I'm hiding it and not telling the truth, then and nobody knows, okay, nobody will know, it's all right. Nobody will know because I did it all by my alone, you know, and nobody was there. But then your own self is the witness. Nobody else may be the witness, but your own self. And immediately that guilty conscious feeling will come. Why the guilty conscious feeling will come? Because the soul is actually very pure in its original nature. Just as I have white clothes, even if there's little stain on it, I will feel bad. Although the whole thing is white, maybe just one small stain, but I will feel bad. Oh, why this stain is there? Because everything is so white, and why that one stain? I will go and wash it immediately. Even that one stain should not remain. If everything is white, let everything be white. Why that one stain? So, I as a soul, in my original nature, I'm a pure soul. I'm a peaceful soul. And if I'm peaceless, I'm not happy, I'm not content within. Because peacelessness is not my true nature. And if I am giving sorrow to someone else, it is even worse. I will not get sleep at night, I'll be so stressful. Because that guilty conscious feeling will go on until I forgive myself. until I forgive myself, that guilty consciousness will be in me, and that is the result of my bad karma. And therefore we say that do what is, what, you know, some people do not know what is good, what is bad, what is right, what is wrong. But spirituality teaches us what is good, what is bad. What's a good action, what's a bad action? What is a sin? What is a virtue? Some people are not really aware of this. For example, someone speaks ill words to me and I get angry with that person. He spoke only one ill word maybe, but I will speak 10 ill words to him. I will retaliate, I will react. Well, according to the law of karma, he spoke only one word, but I reacted so much, then who has committed a bigger sin? Somebody spoke ill, okay, and I slapped him. I hurt him. Who's a bigger sinner? But if I say, why did he say that? Okay, he just spoke. These are words which are in the air only. But you slapped him. You did with the action. He only said in words and you slapped him. It's a very big action. And therefore, I cannot really blame anyone because I will reap what I do. So I should never play this blame game. It's because of him, because of him, because of her. Because I'm getting what I have done. Some people say, I don't give sorrow to anyone. But why people give me sorrow? You know, I don't give sorrow to anyone. I speak so sweetly with everyone. I behave so well with everyone. But people give me sorrow. Well, okay, people give you sorrow. Why do you take sorrow? Nobody can force you to take sorrow. Can anyone force you to take sorrow? There's a very beautiful example of Mahatma Buddha. Very lovely example. One person spoke many, many bad words, many, many bad words to Gautam Buddha. But Buddha was so unperturbed, so stable, he did not say a word. He was very silent, very peaceful. But of course, he must have heard everything. He wasn't deaf, he heard, but undisturbed. Then somebody asked, when that person, all his bad words were finished, whatever he wanted to say, he said it, for how long could he say? You know, for how long can one go on speaking ill words? And when he stopped, Mahatma Buddha asked him very, very sweetly. What did he ask? He said, if someone tries to give something to another person, but that other person doesn't take, then with whom will that thing remain? With whom will that thing remain? And that person was already in an angry state. Of course it will be with that person who was trying to give. So Mahatma Buddha said, well, whatever you tried to give me, I did not take. So it's simple. I did not take. So nobody can give me sorrow. This also is ignorance, to think that it is he who gave me sorrow. It is he who made me stressful. It is because of him I got upset. No, no. It's up to you whether you get upset or angry or not upset and angry. So nobody can give you sorrow. But sometimes it happens that it's too much, you know, that sorrow is too much and you cannot bear it. Then you need a lot of tolerance. even because the tolerance power is very, very important inside. Because, and how will this tolerance come? When I realize that I am actually a peaceful soul. He's trying to give me peacelessness, but I'm not taking. So I don't have to return peacelessness to him. I can still be peaceful. So tolerance power is very, very necessary. But how will that tolerance power come? Nowadays it's so, you know, because the soul is so weak, hardly anyone is able to tolerate. In the earlier days it was so easy to tolerate. In our days, you know, we tolerated from our parents. Now even children don't want to tolerate their parents. You know, we would say, child, do this, do this. And the child did it. Very obedient child. But nowadays you can't say that. Child, do this. What do you have to say? You have to change your language. You say, child, will you do it? Can you say straight away, do it? You'll say, no, I will not do it. So we have to ask permission from the child. Child, will you do it? Will you get me a glass of water? So in the olden days, it was common to say to the child, because child means you can tell him whatever you want him to do. He will do it. But now even children won't do it. So they do also need respect. And sometimes if you tell him, okay child, can you get me a glass of water? He will think, should I get a glass of water or not? And say, no, no, I will not get. Okay, you can't do anything. So everyone needs respect. Before we would say that children need love and elders need respect. You have to give respect to elders, and to children you have to give love. But nowadays even children need respect. Just love will not do, even they want respect. If the mother says something to the child little bit, you know, sternly, and she said it in front of many other his friends, maybe immediately he's upset. Why did you tell me in front of my friends? You insulted me. They even speak such words. In our days, we never said anything to our elders. Somebody was very interestingly saying that when we were little, we listened to our parents. We listen to our parents. But now we have to ask our children. We have to ask our children. We have to respect even the children. We have to respect even the elders. So we are like sandwiched. We have to respect everyone. So tolerance is very, very important. And the soul has to be very strong to tolerate. First of all, even higher than tolerance is appreciate. Everyone is special. No soul is really bad. All, maybe somebody has 99 defects, but there will be one good quality in that soul. So see that quality. And when you see that quality, you will respect that person with that thought, with that vision. Okay, you cannot see any good quality in that person, then at least tolerate him. But if you cannot tolerate him, then at least accept him. She is your wife, he is your husband. Accept him. Nowadays even acceptance is not really working. Immediately, marriage, after 2 days, divorce. Before we used to say marriages are made in heaven. You know, marriages are made in heaven. There was no question of divorce. They were life partners. But today, everything has changed. Why? Because no tolerance power. acceptance power is totally away. Accept. Because there is some karmic account with each soul. You cannot run away, okay, I don't want you, get out. No. There must be some karmic account, that's why there is a relationship. So therefore we say tolerance power, but above that is appreciation. Above that is respect. But at least tolerate and accept. But some who cannot do it, now we see from a different vision. In spirituality, our vision changes. We say that he's playing his own role in this world drama. So at this time, if he's angry with me, if he's upset with me, if he's not behaving well with me, that's his role at the moment. Can you accept that? You go to watch a movie, and in that movie, you see someone acting, very, very badly, very badly, speaking ill words, shouting, screaming at the top of his voice. Now, how do you watch that? Do you also start in the theater, start shouting and screaming like that person is screaming? What do? You just watch as an observer, that's all. Because it's only a movie. It's only on the screen. It's not real. Maybe when it was real, but that real actor, that actor must have done it maybe in that way, but then after the acting was over, film was over, oh, how was my acting? Oh, very good. They are friends again. They are not enemies. In film, they may be enemies, but then when they are finished their shooting, they are friends. We talk about politicians. In politics, we see in the parliament or in the, when the government house, when they are, because of many problems or maybe many arguments, many discussions, they speak such, so badly they may speak. But then when they're out of the parliament, they are friends. They are friends. Don't you feel that? So that was when we say, why you behave like that? Oh, that is part of politics. It's part of politics. So if someone is behaving badly with me, can I see him as an actor who has that role to play at that moment? And I'm just an observer, or just a spectator. And if you want to go deeper than that, I have to think that this person who's angry with me, upset with me, speaking ill words, he's so unhappy. If he would be happy, he would never say like that. He's so unhappy. That's why he's saying it. So he's taking out that unhappiness, bursting out upon me. And then even higher dose than that, he's not just unhappy. I have to feel sorry for him. Why sorry? Because he's a very weak soul. A weak soul. A child is brought in front of a doctor and the doctor has to inject him. Give him some injection. And when the doctor is trying to inject, that child kicks him. You may kick him also. But what does the doctor do? No, child, you'll be okay. You'll be okay. Even if he has been kicked by the child. But the doctor is so patient. So why he's so patient in spite of being kicked? Because the doctor knows he's only a child. He doesn't know. He's so innocent. That prick is there, it is hurting him. But he is an innocent child, so he will still love him. Now that's how we have to become. So what are good actions? What are bad actions? We have to understand that is karma. So what does karma mean? The word karma is a Sanskrit word, karma. In literal terms, the word karma means just an action. It's a verb. Sitting, standing, walking, talking, eating, drinking, sleeping, they're all verbs. So each action I perform is karma. But then in the deeper sense, it's not just action, but also the reaction. Both come under this word karma. Both are used for karma, action and reaction. Every consequence is because of a cause. Cause and the consequence of that cause, both are there. If I see fire somewhere, the fire is not visible, but the smoke is visible. Now that smoke and the carbon particles going upwards, the smoke, there must be fire there. The smoke cannot come without fire. But I may not be able to see the fire, but I can definitely see the smoke. I see the reaction, but I don't see the action. So if the reaction is there, it means that action must have been there before. So if somebody is giving me sorrow, okay, I don't take the sorrow. But if that sorrow is coming again and again and again, it's not just his action, it is the reaction of my action. Maybe I have given him sorrow, but I don't remember. And that is why the sorrow is coming back to me. And what do I have to do to nullify that reaction? I have to be more loveful to him. I have to speak more sweet words with him. I have to make the effort to change him, to help him, to make him understand, however he may be. So what is a sinful action? A sinful action means any action committed under the influence of any vice, or we say body consciousness. So karma and soul consciousness should go together. Because if I'm body conscious, I am so and so, I. How much we say I in the during the whole day? I do something, I have done it. That ego. And we say, what does ego mean? E-G-O. E-G-O means edging God out. You've forgotten God. You've forgotten there's someone who's watching you. There's someone above you who will do the judgment. And that judgment day will come, and then I will get back what I have given. I will experience it. So I should give only that what I want it for myself. And how will I be able to do that? Only when I'm soul conscious. Because if I am body conscious, then all the vices will come. Lust, anger, greed, attachment, ego, jealousy, prejudice, hatred. So many vices. And all these vices which are under influenced by body consciousness, they're all sinful actions. They're all sinful actions. And I will definitely reap for them. Any action done under the influence of any vice. Greed is also a very big vice. There's a saying, there's everything for one's need, but not for one's greed. Greed is a very big vice. How much do I need? My stomach is only one. I cannot eat more. I will not be able to digest. And therefore, what I eat has some limitation. How much can I keep? I don't need so much food. You know, in Hindi, there are very rhyming words. Pet, pet, we say in Hindi for stomach. The stomach doesn't need much. But pet, peti, peti means your suitcases, your boxes which you have. You can store as many boxes as you want because you can get many, many boxes, but stomach is only one. So in Hindi, the stomach is pet and boxes are peti. So for pet is only one, but petis can be many because you can store in so many boxes. But how much do you need? So there is everything for one's need. Nature has given us everything, but not for greed. And because of greed, it's leading to so much corruption. Corruption in the world. Corruption is growing and growing and growing. Some people say, you know, they say money is a vice. Money is not a vice. Money is not a vice. Money is needed. You need wealth. You need money. Food, clothing, shelter, you need that money. But if it is greed, then that becomes a vice. How much money do I need? How many clothes, how many shoes can I put on? How much? How many houses can I have? How many shops can I keep? Do I need that much? There are so many who don't even have what I have. So Mother Nature is giving for everyone, but then if some consume more and the others don't have, that's greed. You know, we say in today's world, 80% of the natural resources which nature is giving, matter is giving, are used by only 20%. Only by 20%, 80% resources are being used. So 20% people enjoying 80% resources. And those 80% are devoid of those resources because of 20% who are extravagant, who have plenty. So that's why there is so much imbalance in this world. We are noticing that. So that's a very big vice. Attachment is also a big vice. Attachment, you'll say attachment is love. It's a big difference between attachment and love. When there's attachment, there is sorrow. When there's love, there's happiness. You can understand through that. Love is different from attachment. Attachment is that when someone is hurt, I feel more hurt. No. Okay, he's hurt, I can be a detached observer like a doctor. Treating the patient, like a nurse treating a patient. But if she herself is hurt, how can she heal the patient? She has to stay at that detached. You know, when during corona time, COVID time, everyone was so cautious. The doctors had to work so hard, but then how they covered themselves so that they would not be affected. And that's what we say. We have to understand that we have to be protected. And how will that protection come? It will come through my meditation. So when I meditate, immediately I can feel that the soul is protected. I'm not hurt. I'm not disappointed. I'm not afraid. I'm not unhappy. But what I am, that I have to give. And when I think of that, I can remain detached and loving all the time. And I will create good karma. And those good karma will ultimately give me happiness. I hope it's clear. There are, of course, karma philosophy, karma topic is so deep. But up to now, maybe only this much. And if there are any questions, welcome. I can see. Huh? Is there anyone? Yeah, any questions?
Yes, we have a couple of questions. We do have a couple of questions.
Oh, thank you, Didi. Because already I'm seeing 12, 10.
Yes, and we can bring them up. But here's one. Very good question. God is watching us, you said. Does this mean that God has created this law of karma and that he monitors and gives us the fruit and the result?
Can you just repeat?
I can. God is watching us, you said. So does this mean that God created this law of karma and that God monitors us and gives us the fruit?
See, now for this we have to understand, going to deeper philosophy, that three things are eternal in this world. They were never created, nor will they ever be destroyed. First is a soul. It was never created and will never be destroyed. Can never be created, never destroyed. And thirdly, this matter, the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, all these five elements are also eternal. So we say this world is a drama. It's an eternal drama. There was never a time when time did not exist. Time has always existed. Time is not linear. It doesn't start here and end here. That first there was nothing, no. Time is cyclic. History repeats itself. We say everything is cyclic. And therefore, this world was always there. It will always remain there. But then there are three eternal entities, but the game is between two. The third one is only an observer. The game is between soul and matter. Soul and matter are playing their roles. Just like an actor coming on a stage, he has a costume. So this body is a costume which is made of matter. And matter is actually not perishable. Matter, or we say energy, if you want to call it physical energy. Energy or matter can never be created nor destroyed, but it only changes its form from one to the other. That's what we learn in science. So matter is also never created. So God did not create this world. This world is eternal. But what he does is he changes the world. He changes the world. Just like a patient who is very, very sick, and maybe he's on his deathbed, hopeless case. But then there a doctor who knows everything and he gives him such a medicine which revives that patient, and from hopeless state he comes into hope again. Then what do we say to the doctor? Doctor, you gave him a new life. He was dying, but you gave him a new life. Now that doesn't mean that he created him. That patient was already there. He was a living being. But then he gave him a new life. A new life means a new birth. Hopeless into hopeful. So today we are saying the world is like a hopeless state. Destruction, destruction. People are so frightened. Any time a bomb can fall on my head. You know, people are so much in fear today. I won't go into all that detail, but then we know that nothing can be destroyed also forever, no. It's an eternal drama. After night, the day has to come back. So now it's the end of Iron Age, we say, but that Golden Age has to come back. So what God does is He just helps in transforming from Iron Age to Golden Age. Like we speak about entropy, in science we speak about entropy. That how everything goes from a higher stage to a lower stage. And then when it reaches the lowest stage, there's an external force which comes and makes that lower stage one reach the top again. That's entropy going down and then again coming back above. Now that's how we understand karma. That God is like the supreme judge. We say He gives the right judgment. That's why every religion believes in the day of judgment. Day of segregation. God gives the right judgment. In God's world, there is complete judgment. There's complete justice. So justice means you will get the judgment. You will get what you give. So in this world, God doesn't act with us. God is watching you means He's only like a judge. He does give the judgment at the end. Therefore, we have to be very careful. I just cannot do what I want to do. I'm accountable to God. I'm accountable to God. I just cannot do anything what I want to do. No. But then, I have a hold over my karma. Whatever I do, I will reap. And therefore, let me not do anything which will give me that bad reaction, because it was because of me that I've got it. So let me not blame anyone, let me not even blame God. It's my own karma. And therefore, I have to make sure that I create the right karma. And that's where meditation helps us, that whatever action I do it in soul conscious state and God conscious state. I'm a soul and I'm the child of God. If I think in this way, all my actions will be righteous. And if I'm not aware of myself as a soul, I'm body conscious, then my senses will become the masters of the soul. Actually, the soul is the master of the senses. The driver is the master of the vehicle. But what if the vehicle becomes the master and the driver is under the control of the vehicle? Everything will go wrong. So that's how we understand. So karma means the right judgment from God, because He is the supreme justice. So everything is eternal, and now the time has really come, we say, when God has come. So we have to be very careful to make sure that we create the right karma, because we will reap for that. I think it is clear.
Thank you, Didi. But let's be clear, God is not punishing me.
So don't blame God that He's punishing, no. Okay, you confess to God. But then, after that, make a promise to, I will not repeat it, I will not do it again. You know, like a small child, it does something, it doesn't, a child shouldn't do so, he says, Mommy, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And every time he's repeating the same thing. And again, Mommy will say, what sorry, sorry, you're not changing yourself. You must change. So just don't say sorry, but make a promise that you will not repeat that mistake again. So that's how we understand God's judgment.
I am definitely counting on God in my final moments to be a source of support as I face my karma.
Yeah, that's another case. So when I'm facing my karma, if I'm in the remembrance of that of the Supreme Being, that I will not feel the sorrow. I know it's my karma, but I will take it happily. Okay, my karma, I will take it happily, and God will give me that strength to face that karma boldly accept it, because even that is great power within me, that I can face it, I can accept it. So I remember the Father, the Supreme Being, taking light from Him, the might from Him, and becoming aware of myself as a true soul and changing myself. Even that will help me to finish my karma.
Thank you, Didi. Very clear. I don't know if anyone else has a question. Please bring it up if you do. Maybe Terry can bring it to me. But we have two here. What is the greatest challenge you have faced in your spiritual journey? The greatest challenge you have faced in your spiritual journey?
Well, if you ask me, I don't think anything is a challenge. I don't think anything is a challenge. Why do we think it's a challenge? Because maybe I'm not able to tolerate, I'm not able to face, I'm not able to accept. But if I can accept, I can tolerate, I can face it, because God is with me, and I'm truthful, I'm not guilty, and truth will definitely win. Where there's truth, there is God, there is winning. But if I am wrong, then I should not expect that God will help me. So I have to be truthful. So again, I am responsible. So let me not think it to be a challenge and then get afraid or frightened or, you know, just go away from it. Okay, I'll face it, because I am in the doing the truth. And what is the truth? Any action done in soul conscious state is a master of the senses. Done under the influence of vices will definitely be a sinful action. So I am the master. How should I see? How should I listen? How should I speak? How should I behave with my limbs? So if I'm aware of all that, then I don't have to worry at all. Let the challenge come, doesn't matter. But it's not a challenge for me. It's definitely a test which I have to pass. Mm-hmm. A test is not a challenge. It is maybe finishing of my karma.
Such faith.
It is an elevation. It is uplifting me. It is giving me a higher stage. It is making me more strong. So it's not a challenge.
It's a gift.
It's a gift.
Okay.
It's a gift.
That's wonderful. Such faith. Good to see. Okay, here's a question. In an abusive mental or physical abuse, in a situation where there is mental or physical abuse, and where tolerance no longer works, what is the path of karma?
Well, that's also a very good question. Actually, it's not that always you have to tolerate. Then we use the other power, the power to discriminate and decide. It's very important to discriminate what has happened. For example, someone comes to you and shows you a gun and says, come on, give all your your wealth and all your gold and all whatever you have, just give. What is the safest thing to do? Just give him. Don't fight with him, because you may not win. He will not only take away everything from you, but he will shoot you, kill you and take away. So the best thing is to tolerate, in the sense that you give him. But if he's after your character, it is a character which is going to stay in the soul. You have to fight. There you cannot tolerate, you have to face. That's how we understand.
Face and discern.
Yeah,
and decide.
Discern. First you have to discriminate. Know what is right, what is not right. The right thing, if he's just asking for money, okay, give. But if he's after character, the right thing is you have to save your character. And you can fight, even if you may have to die for it. But you will not stay in your character.
And so in this case, fighting...
It's a very big thing.
In this case, fighting might mean...
Definitely fight. That's why, you know, people teach Thai and Karate and this and that.
Uh-huh.
You have to fight. But don't fight all the time. You have the strength, but don't fight all the time. You have to fight only when the other one is also very strong. A boxer will not fight with a very weak boxer who has no strength at all. He will want the one opposite to him to be like him.
Here is another question. How can we change bad karma of a whole community?
We say you cannot think of the whole world like that. First you have to change yourself. We start with the self. Therefore in this organization we say self-realization leads to God-realization. And self-transformation leads to world transformation. If you want to realize God, first realize yourself. If you want to transform the world, first transform yourself. So when I am transformed, I am able to change myself, then I can change my family. If I can change my family, then I can definitely change my society. And when I'm able to change my society, I can change my nation and then the world. So let me start with myself. That's what we say in this organization. You know, people may think, how self-transformation will be able to change the whole world? We say, at least start with yourself first. Start with yourself first. When you go home and you reach home, and your wife comes in front of you and she gets upset with you, don't get angry with her. That is transforming the self first. Smile at her. If you have that habit of getting angry, upset, but when you, after having gone from Mount Abu, from this peace of mind retreat, you are a transformed person and you did not get angry, you did not react, you will say, oh, you have come back changed. Mm-hmm. You have come back changed. Then next day you get the food and the food may be having no salt. You could have got angry, but then you don't mind because it's like God's grace. God has given food. Accept it with love. Respect that food you eat. You know, some people get angry, they throw away the food. What have you cooked today? No, never do that. It's God who has given that food to you. So think in that way. And so if anything comes to upset you, think it's a test for me. I have to pass in this test. I cannot get upset. I cannot get angry. I cannot shout. I have to give love. I have to give love because I'm a loving soul. So this is a change I bring in myself. And when I bring this change in myself, naturally the other one will also bring a change in herself or himself. And then the children also will bring a change in themselves. So this is how the whole house will change. Mm. And when I change, my family changes, my neighbors will watch. And they will say, how did all this happen? Then you can serve them also. And help them to change also. So in this way, it's like a chain reaction. In this way, you can change the world.
Wonderful. Possible? Very nice, very nice.
And that's what we are doing. We have brought so many here. Why have all of you come here? To bring that transformation in you. And when each one of you goes back transformed, how many more will you be able to transform? Just imagine. And why not? Why can't we then change the world? That's why you have come here. That's why you have come. We have invited you here to transform the self in order to transform the world and bring a golden age on this earth. Right?
Yes.
Are you ready for that? Are all of you ready for that? Yes. That's it. Okay.
Yes, shall we end there?
Yeah.
I have two more questions.
If there are any questions, you must have understood now. Do you still want to ask questions? No need.
We have two more here. What do you think? Shall we hear them? Yeah. Okay, here we go. So this is actually quite useful for all of us. Although this is one specific situation, the situation is somebody who is living in poverty and you give money to help that person better their life. But maybe bettering their life in another location where they're more exposed to other issues and problems.
Oh yeah.
Even what is the karma?
Well, this is also a very big thing, I understand. Now supposing a beggar comes in front of you and asks for money, but you don't know what that beggar will do with that money. Maybe he'll go and drink. Maybe after he drinks, he may commit even a murder. Now, that karma which he did was because of the money you gave him. If you would not have given him money, he would not have committed that crime. So you also become partly responsible. Therefore, we say in karma philosophy, let that person to whom you give be a right person. You have to make sure. And therefore we say, okay, I don't give money, I can give him food. He's hungry, okay, give him food. He has no clothes, okay, give him clothes. But money can again make someone commit sins.
Now, in this case, it's a small child who lives in poverty and then is given the money, the opportunity to study at a school in a big city. So they leave the safety of their little village and go to a big city, but to better themselves.
Yeah, that's good if you can help in that way. So many people do. They are wealthy, so they do help in this way, orphanages, they help in different groups.
So that's a good karma.
Yeah, it's a good karma. Why
to help
not?
In that way.
It is definitely, it's a good karma. Some give wealth in opening hospitals, some give wealth in giving in the opening schools and colleges. So that's a good thing. I think for religious purposes, okay, it's a good thing they are coming closer to God. So it depends on what that karma, for what purpose is it.
Beautiful.
And whether that person is the right person to give or not. Otherwise don't give money, you can give other things.
Thank you. Okay, this is the last question now.
Okay.
How do you remain sensitive to and aware of the divine in your daily life? How do you remain sensitive to God in your daily life?
Yeah, very, very sweet. So we say that God is, you are in the company of God and you are also a companion of God. God is your companion and you are always in his company. That's why many have said God is everywhere. Why is it mentioned God is everywhere? For many reasons. Before, people used to get visions of light, visions in different forms. So they would feel that God is everywhere. Then people started committing many crimes and sins. So just to make people be afraid of committing sins, it was said God is watching you. Now God need not watch everyone, because each soul has his own karmas, has his own those personality traits you have been told about, your sanskars, what we say. It's all registered in your soul and you will get the fruit accordingly. So that is there. But then what we say is that God is watching you, but we say God is with me. I'm not alone. It's very, very helpful, but I'm not alone. I have no fear because God is there. The Almighty is there with me. Like a small child with his father. His father, he's holding the father's hand. He's not afraid. You know, there's a very interesting story on this. Once the father told his child, child, hold my hand. Hold my hand. And the child said, no, daddy, you hold my hand. You know this story. You hold my hand. Then the father said, what's the difference between you holding my hand and I holding your hand? The child was very intelligent. He said, father, when I will hold your hand, my hand is weak, weaker than your hand. So this hand may come, may be out. But if you hold my hand, the fist will be very strong. And therefore, I will never be lost. So you hold my hand. So should the child hold the father's hand or should the father hold the child's hand? Father. So that's how we experience the father is holding my hand. He's my true companion. I'm always in his company. Like we sometimes say, I'm joint. Like we have Siamese babies. Siamese babies, joint. So one cannot run away from the other. We're always together. So I'm always together with God. Whatever I'm doing, that Supreme Father is working through me. He's the one who does and he's the one who gets it done. I'm only an instrument. It's a beautiful way of really doing actions where you become only an instrument of God. I'm doing under his instructions. There are two things to understand this. I'm a soul seeing through these eyes. I'm a soul speaking through this mouth. And the second is, God is using me as an instrument to see through these eyes. So it's both ways. Therefore, I cannot separate myself from God. And therefore, I will not do anything wrong which is against God's will.
Beautiful.
Okay?
Thank you very much. That is the highest karma. Useful? Yeah, very nice. Okay.